The Isuzu Ute A-League Grand Final is here. All drama, all noise, all action. Watch Melbourne City and Central Coast Mariners go all in to be crowned champions. Experience it live. Search A-League's tickets.
I'm Laurie McKenna, and I'm here today with Daniel McBreen, Matt Simon and Josh Rose, Mariners legends, to talk about the history of the club and talking about 10 years since being in the grand final. So we're going to have a good chat with the boys, and I'm sure there'll be a few laughs and a few stories.
So Laurie, you were obviously at the fulcrum of the starting of the club. What was that like, setting up a club from nowhere, from non-existent, to getting it to up and running?
It was November 2004, the announcement was made the Mariners were getting in. We had no idea if we were getting in. It was a hectic few months to get players on the park, and the first tournament we got ready for was the World Club Championship. Then we set up at the training at Mingara. We had a good setup, but as things with training in the Central Coast goes, when it came to August, we had to leave that because the school athletics carnival used the running track, so we got given the arse, and then we had to go elsewhere.
Essentially, you're trying to magic something out of nothing. You don't have the facilities, you don't have anywhere really a base. How was that at the start? It must have been difficult.
Well, Matty was involved for the second year on, and Matty, we trained up the mountains, we trained at Budgieboy, we trained at Jubilee. We had 19 training venues in 5 years. And basically, I would get a phone call for the council in the morning when I was away picking up the chickens and the salad for the boys' lunch. Training's off, so we went to Widalba, we went to Budgieboy. Was at Budgieboy one day and we couldn't train because the parakeets flew in from the Midwest because there were a drought and ate all the grass. John Aloisi's first training session in 2008. There were a burnt out car in the middle of the training field in the cricket wicket. And then when Vinny's first training session, we're playing a five-a-side or something, and a woman walked across the middle of the park and a dog shit in the ground. And what did we do? We
just picked up. That's what she thought of your training session.
We just picked up a cone and scooped up. So, right, boys, continue. And the boys just got on with it.
So you know, it was pretty ad hoc.
Yeah, it was ad hoc. There were no whinging. We just done it. And that was how it was.
So you had proper goals and everything, I heard as well. Like there was a jumpers for goalposts. And
we had a couple of poles. We trained out at the uni, near the uni. There were a park out there. And I told Alec Tobin, make a 70-metre down that line and I'll do the 70 metres here. And I'm looking at the field, he'd only done 60 metres and I'd done 70. It was like a hexagon we're training at. And we had the two poles because I remember Adam Kwasnik had a go at Peter Turnbull in the dressing room. Nil all. And the chairman's came in and went, he couldn't score. And Kwas piped up and went, if he gave his bloody goals, we might be able to score instead of having poles. And that's what it's like. But I met the plumber who made the plastic goals for us. Can you remember the plastic goals?
Yeah, used to put them together every day.
We used to put them together apart, every day, and it was made out of 4-inch drain pipes. So, but we just got on. There's no use whinging because there was nobody to listen to us.
And what about you from a player's perspective? Obviously, you come from the local leagues.
Yeah.
Did you see a huge jump in professionalism when you see, everything there was?
Yeah, back then I was obviously just being happy to, you know, be a part of it. When you look back now and how everything's progressed, you look back and go, wow, how did we get through those times? And the only way we got through them was, you know, Laurie doing everything he did and having the players that he had around the group. Like, when I look back now, you have players like, you know, John Aloisi, Tony Vidmar, Tom Pondilak, Nick Merger, all these great players and had big careers. We're training on hockey fields in joggers. You know, and I think, imagine doing that now. It's like, there's just no way that it wouldn't happen now. But we just got on with it. You know, we'd make do, and I think that's why, you know, we were so successful in those early years.
Now, there's one thing that probably hasn't changed, and we joked about it before we came in to sit down here, is that because of the limited resource and limited people, you weren't just head coach, you were head chef, you were the head groundsman, you were everything, and that's still going on today. That's something that stuck. So there was never just, this is your job role, is it? You come and do this. Everyone had to pitch in everywhere and help all around the place.
And that's for the players. Yep. That's the players helping it, staff helping it, wives. Like if we went interstate, Christine used to wash the kit because we never turned a kit man with us. So when we come back, she would wash the kit and have it done for Joe Spiteri, Fat Fingers, on the Monday when we got to training. And everybody just mucked in and done multiple jobs. Myself, Alec Tobin and Ian Ferguson used to get in and hang the gear up. We get to the ground, we'd put the gear up, set the gear up for the boys. It just worked. And everybody done as much as they could for everybody else. And they were great mates off the park as well.
And it obviously worked on the field as well, because it was quite successful.
Ah, no, it's like at the beginning to make that grand final year one. But we won the pre-season cup that year, and we're going, oh, maybe we've got something here, you know. And then as we went on, the season was all right. And then we had a great run at the end, and we made the grand final against Sydney when Bimby scored, which was heartbreaking, you know, to do so well and to get so far. And then to look at all the Mariners fans, like thousands, over 10,000 Mariners fans made the trip down, and it was heartbreaking. And we came back to the Leagues Club in Gosford, and we had about 600 people jump in the room, and you walk in and you go, why are these people still here? It's like 4 hours after the game, and it was really emotional. And then somebody started whistling, always looking the bright side of life, in Monty Python's, and then everybody started singing and that, and it was just one of those magic moments.
6-7, your first year there,
yeah.
Didn't make finals, because you were in there, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, you took time to acclimatise.
Yeah, he never scored any goals that season.
No, he didn't, I checked that as well.
So basically, it was very close, and then he went to Hong Kong Sevens, and he scored a few goals. I mean, away with the young Socceroos, the Ollie Roo team, and scored a few goals. So you were enjoying coming to training rather than going up a ladder and plaster.
Yeah, exactly right. I didn't care what time the message came in about training, as long as the message came that I was still coming to train. And so, you know, it is what it is. Back then, it was the same first as the first year. You know, Laurie was doing everything. Players were helping where I think when you play or work for the Mariners, there's no job description. And I think that sort of mentality of everyone amongst the club from back then has just sort of come back through. Yeah, and we didn't make the finals that year, did we? We, you know, it was quite disappointing. Just missed out. The next year was, you know, we bounced back, made some good signings, and
we brung Vidi back. Vidi came back. That was not long after this heart scare, and then we got John Aloisi halfway through the season. Ivan Cechely, I think, came in short term as well. We got Sash Petrovsky.
Mila Jedinak was.
Yeah,
Jedinak, you know,
came
up
through. That's when he stepped up as well.
How does a club like the Mariners then, with no resources, no training ground, no anything, pull players like Vidi, John Aloisi in? I'm assuming you didn't have a big budget to go, here, we'll give you $1 million for the year, come and join us. How do you manage to draw players like that in?
As Matty said earlier, like, they mucked in with everybody else to do what was needed to be done. We had a promo here, a promo there, they were there. And that summed up everybody at the club. That ever came in early days, they had to work with what everybody else was doing. And the achievement is to make young kids come to games and want to aspire to be a Matty Simon.
Yeah, and I think what we use to this day as well is the lifestyle of the Central Coast. You know,
big thing.
Everyone's
huge
played
thing.
And Laurie's obviously lived, and we've all lived here. You know, Terrigal is just unbelievable, and you have players that, you know, either coming from overseas or from other A-League clubs, they've stayed in Terrigal before for an away match, and that's what we sell.
That's how I got Monty to come 10 years ago.
Yeah.
we were just talking about that when I was over in Scotland recently. I caught up with Mikey McGlinchey, and he said it was an easy sell when he had to go and speak to Jason. And Monty rang him, can you go and speak to Jason? It was an easy sell, just... Mate, it's an incredible place to live. Like, you know, it's fantastic. Lecky. You'll love it.
Back then, Lecky used to drive all the players past the stadium and go, yeah, that's where we train every day.
There's always a bit of smoke and daggers with Laurie, isn't there?
When I was on Sky, I just came back from China, and I was negotiating with Monty, and I was in the flat in Terrigal overlooking the water, and I Skyped him every morning, was having my breakfast, my cornflakes, going, Monty, it's like this every day here. That got Monty. Every now and again, Monty walked past and go, thanks so much for persuading us to come here.
So it also helps that you get out in the community and you do all that stuff, but it helps when you're winning as well. And that was a year when, you know, he's went on to win the Premier's Plate. He also built up a good rivalry with those noisy neighbours down the up the road that you and I have been at as well since.
The World Club Championship beginning, we played them in the Wednesday after we won the first round, I think, against Adelaide, and Nick Merger broke Durante's leg, and it was quite a bad tackle, and there were a bit of the hatred come in after that. And but I remember during the first year, we travelled up in big numbers, we went up to play Newcastle, and then I'd come out in the press and said, it'd be good if the Newcastle fans came down in numbers instead of coming in the minibus. So that weekend, Fruit for All, who's a big sponsor of the boys, used to Saturday morning, routine was go there, have a coffee with the boys sitting outside Woolies before I got the chickens for training. And all these punters were walking about in Newcastle jet strips on, and one boy came up and said, hey, McKenna, enough of us now, because we were everywhere, you know. They would, and that was the first game they actually came down in numbers. So my little hand grenade, and then obviously you were there and I was there. I was there for 5 years. Yeah. They were bringing down 2,000 or 3,000 fans. You know, they come, we met at the Gosford pub, marched through the car park, got it was brilliant. It's as close to being in Europe as you'll get. We won the minor premiership. We won it in the last game of the season where Quoz scored the goal in injury time against Wellington. And we needed Sydney.
We needed three results.
Three results go our way. It was Melbourne Victory were playing Sydney at Sydney. I phoned Muskie up and said, Muskie, don't let those so-and-sos beat you. And I remember he's done a tackle on the goal line and they changed the goalkeeper.
Yeah, that's right.
Langerat. He was the young boy at the time. And I'm going, what are they doing? And then the next day we relied on...
we needed Brisbane, Adelaide. We needed Adelaide to beat Brisbane.
And Danny Teatle got sent off after, like, just before half-time. And we were like, yes. And the taxis went round about for, like, usually for where we're training, but it was to meet in the Terrigal pub.
Well, we were sitting in the pub as
we,
a team.
We all met in the top pub.
Watching the first result happen, we were like, well, here we go. We're a chance here. We're sitting in the pub and we're like, we're really a chance here. So then everyone came in, because I think the Melbourne-Sydney game was the night before and the other two were back-to-back on the Sunday. So we're sitting there, and then once Teatle got sent off, everyone was there, the team was there. Yeah. And then we're like, we're, you know...
That's the first time I had a Jager bomb. I didn't know what Jager bomb was.
And then I think it was Harps on the call after the result went our way. He's like, oh, I just want to give a shout out to the Mariners players at Terrigal Pub. And we're like, oh, here we go. It was just... It was everyone. And there were some funny moments that night, you know, standing in just the whole team, fans, staff, just in a big circle in the pub. And just some funny things happened that night. And
but we're on a cut price budget as well.
Yeah.
When they phoned the chairman to give us money, we only got a grand.
Yeah, I think he put some money on the bar and it was gone with one round. So, to get to the grand final the way we did, to beat Newcastle, overturn that 2-0 deficit, you know, we were feeling great, we were feeling positive. It was an unfortunate goal that, you know, that they scored, probably from a mistake of ours.
Vidi slipped
at the back, and you know, look at the career Vidi's had. You would, you know, if you were going to put money on someone having a mistake at the back ladder,
it was a decent goal for Bridgie.
Yeah, Bridgie still had a lot of work to do, and he scored. And you know, I remember we had chances, you know, at the end of the game where we just had no luck. And then, you know, everyone remembers the handball in the box from a coastie boy, you know, in James Holland. And you know, as clear as day, as everyone in the stadium could see it. VAR, you know, back then it's a penalty. And I think Mark Shield actually called you, Laurie, and apologised.
He called me, it was quite a few months later, and he drove up, he was down in Sydney Water, and he just came up and apologised and wanted to say sorry. And that was really nice, because he was a nice guy and a top referee.
Everyone
and
makes mistakes.
And he got it wrong, and, you know, it didn't make us feel any better. I remember going in the press conference after it and Danny being sent off, and I didn't even know what he'd been for. I didn't know he'd pushed the referee's finger out his face or something. But I went in the press, were, well, what do you think of the handball? I said, well, I don't need to talk about that, because yous all saw it. I don't need to say nothing, because it was a shocking miss. And obviously, if we either get a penalty, we'd have to score. You're going into the extra time with the momentum, and you'd have backed us because we were dominating at the time. And then, as you said, late on we had a few chances, but in the first half, Stuart Petrie, Brownie, we had a few chances in the first half as well, but it wasn't to be. And, you know, that was just another part of that rivalry that's built over the years, getting beat for you. Because even I was up there for 5 years at Newcastle and had a great time, but I still used to go to speaking events and get hammered about the grand final.
He had 5 years as a head coach of the club, and the next year didn't make the finals again. But then it was a time to move on, and you decided you were stepping aside, and Arnie come in, and two of us, me, you, Rosie, and myself, were two of the ones that came in.
I signed these both.
Yeah, you
and
did.
In the new role,
you signed us, and then Arnie come in, and we had three quarters or two thirds of a pitch that's still there now. It's on an angle that goes like that.
And if it rained, it was...
Yeah, and that's all we had. But we had a base, and we had somewhere where we could go as a team. Rosie, your first thoughts when you came? You'd come from overseas. You'd been in Romania.
Yeah, look, I was talking to Laurie a fair bit from January on, and it sort of didn't quite get over the line. And then Arnie sort of came in, and everything went quiet a bit because Arnie didn't not quite know who I was. But in the end, got it done, I think. So my wife and I were living in Brisbane at the time, and there was interest from the Roar, but we wanted something different, I think, to experience something else other than Brisbane. We'd lived there in Queensland for our whole life, so we wanted to try out Central Coast, and like most other people, we loved the place and haven't left. So yeah, no, look, it was incredible coming in and just speaking with all the boys that had been there for the 5 years previous. I think you hear about the burnt out car story and all these other stories. It's just, yeah, it's just so you try and think back, at least we had a training base, you know, like we sort of look, we had a three-quarter pitch, but these boys were buzzing because we were in the same place every day.
The change rooms were blocked off from the RSL, remember? And they locked off the inside door and we exited, you know, from the outside.
Sometimes they'd not be blocked off and guys would just wander on in, getting changed. Oh, what are you guys doing here? Oh, we're the Mariners team. Oh, hey, guys. But I suppose, you know, Rosie and I probably can't comment on, but what was the difference? Arnie comes in now, Laurie stepped up into the other side. Was there a difference for you guys coinciding with obviously a training base, but did Arnie bring anything different to the table?
Well, I think the best thing of that period was that, you know, not Laurie finished coaching, but he actually moved up into the head of football role. So, you know, he'd put all that groundwork in and knew what the club was about, the area. So he actually was still up in the office overseeing everything and could help that transition, which I think if that didn't happen, it probably wouldn't have gone so well. And then
Arnie wasn't easy, so I can imagine Arnie dealing with the chairman every day.
So Arnie was very demanding. I know from when he first come in, I think a part of his thing was coming in. I think he said to Pete that, you know, the training pitch at the time was just a bush. It was forest. It was like waist high. He said, that needs to be a pitch in the next couple of months or I'm not coming. Yeah. So, and obviously, you know, Laurie being upstairs helped a lot. But again, I think if we didn't have the right players and the right people around, still, as we say, it's like we joke about those change rooms. Imagine doing that now. You wouldn't be allowed to do that now. So
I think we could all honestly say, and this is no disrespect to Laurie, but Arnie had been around in the national team camps and seen at the standard that what they expected at national team level. Gus Hiddink, you know, he'd been around some top guys. And I think he tried to bring that in as well. Remember the first game we had and he said, we're all meeting at the training base to have lunch together and then we're going to go to the game. And we were like, we all want to be at home, being comfortable and everything. Yeah. He was trying to bring that camp mentality in, but the thing with him as well was he went, that didn't work, so let's change it, and this is what we want to do.
I remember he pulled us after the first few rounds and said, like, what's going on? And I said, well, it's not a camp situation anymore. You know, he's so used to being in that camp situation. And then, you know, after those first three rounds, and we explained that, you know, you're better off doing like things like that. Yeah, it was probably best, you know, from him, he took those sort of things on board. Those discussions wasn't just like, oh, nah, I don't agree, it's my way. Yeah. You know, he was probably one of the first ones after 2 weeks. You know, he'd come in and all dressed up and then he's got the pluggers on in the boardies. You know, I remember Patrick coming into the change room, into the, you know, little half cut thing, and he's dressed like Louis Vuitton head to toe. And everyone's like, who's this guy? Two weeks, mate. He's board shorts and thongs. And I'm like, ah, perfect.
And that's, again, testament to the character of people that come in, realising, well, this is how you go with this group. This is who we are. No one cares about if you've got a $300 Gucci belt on. You're more likely to get the piss taken out of you than that's this. I don't wear a belt. I can't afford a belt because Laurie kept giving me shit contracts. Look, it was obviously a successful time, 3 years. You know, it was probably at the wrong time, really, with Brisbane being the team they were with under Ange, that we could have been a dynasty, really. We sort of were, but we were always fighting with them. And that first year, they were exceptional. And we ended up making another grand final towards the end of the year. And I can remember my underlying memory of that was that you and I didn't know whether who was going to start.
Yeah.
Till about lunchtime.
Game day.
The day of the game. And we kept messing with each other. Are you starting? Am I starting? Do you know? And he pulled us in and you obviously started that game. And yeah, just the feeling around that grand final. You'd already been around it. For us, it was a new feeling. How, for you as a, you know, you'd been at Auckland Kings when they weren't getting anywhere near a grand final.
Yeah, to be fair, like obviously I left to go to Romania 4 years earlier because I couldn't get an A-League contract.
Right.
So for me coming back, it was a massive chance for me to prove myself in Australia. So I felt I had quite a good first year, but I was sitting by myself in Brisbane watching the grand final the year before in a pub because we didn't have Fox at home. So I went and watched it by myself and just thinking to myself, like, how good would it be to, you know, play in one of them? And 12 months later, I was there. So I think my thinking of that day, I was so grateful to be there the week lead up, but you've got people like Hutch and Wilco who had lost two already. So after the game, I was gutted with how it went down and everything, but it's just the gratefulness of being able to celebrate the being there for the week and the day. But then you look at Hutch and Wilco and the, you know, the disappointment of losing another one.
There's a photo I've got of Hutch, and I kept it because he's a mate and you like to take the mickey out of him, and it cuts and he goes across and he's on the floor crying with his hands down, and because that was his third grand final he'd been a part of, and he'd lost three in 7 years or five, 6 years in the comp. And it was devastating, and you could feel it all around. And not only was it devastating, but I hate it. And I know it's probably true, but when people say that as a neutral, that's the best grand final to watch because it was so exciting and the way it unpanned. And Brisbane, you know, on the balance of play throughout the season, you probably go, they deserve to be champions as well because they were phenomenal that year. But the way they took it, they got it.
I still haven't watched it.
I still haven't watched it.
Got right, because it was so close.
Well, I remember Nick Merger's story. He was up in the box and it was 5 minutes to go and he knew it was going to take a while to get down in the lift. So he got in the lift, went down, and he said he was there going like that to all the Brisbane supporters. And then when by the time he got to the bottom, all the Brisbane fans were going nuts, and he goes, oh, they're going nuts. They've scored a goal. There's no time left. They can't. Yep. And then he realised, oh no, they've scored two goals.
For it to go down like that, I remember on the bus on the way home, we were having a beer in the back, and you know, Arnie came down and we're sitting there having a beer, and honestly would just rather lose 6-0.
Yeah.
Get absolutely battered, yeah. And just say, oh well, we just got outplayed. It was good to play in the grand final, but to lose it like that, I remember that corner, you know, look at the camera went to Arnie and he was just like this, and I'm thinking, oh no, like, man, obviously, you know, he's had some experience with 2-0 score lines. But yeah, it was just something we never expected to happen. Use your right foot, hook it out.
Still to this day, I think Pedge was fouled.
100%. 100%.
Pedge was fouled, and yeah. I should have cleared the ball out, not for a corner, but for a throw-in.
100%.
But fair to say, we came back, and we did go to the pub. We stayed at the pub for about 4 days, and most of us didn't see our family because we were like, we're not going to be nice people to be around, just in the manner that we lost it. But then we had to pick ourselves up.
Just while we're on that pub for 4 days. Yeah, I just want to clarify something. This is going to be a good chance. Even the card game we always used to play and like pull the card out of the hat and it's your shout. I got done 5 times in a row that night. That was a stitch up, wasn't it? It was a stitch up.
It wasn't.
Just because you were on the big money.
Yeah. No, actually the 5th time got declined. I had to borrow money from Wilco.
Wilco had to pay it, I remember. And I don't think it was a stitch up. I think it was just lucky. Unlucky. Lucky for us. And we had a pretty good year the year after as well, didn't we? You banged in 11 goals by January and then went to Korea that year, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think going into the next season, we tweaked a few things after we lost. You know, we didn't even make the grand final after being premiers. You know, and went around Wellington with the plate we'd drawn it on because we didn't get it given to us, and we had this drawn on plate. I think it might have still been in the on the wall.
Poor Arnie had the peg on him every time.
So yeah, we had a bit of a game in the pub, didn't we? Whoever had the peg on him after every 10 minutes had to buy the round, and every 10 minutes Arnie had a peg on him somewhere.
He went and sat at the bar. He goes, "You're not getting me this time, boys." And we got the barman, "Can you slip that on Arnie for us?" And as soon as he slipped it on, "All right, who's got the bag?" He's like, "Ah, bloody hell."
We thought it'd be us and Brisbane, but Western Sydney come in and we had a few ding-dongs with them in that season as well.
Yeah, I think like Western Sydney were very good. I think they almost started like we did in 2010. They were very, very hard to beat, defensively very sound. By the third year, we'd gone from being very defensively sound to almost dominating a lot of games, which was a lot more enjoyable in 2013, to just really have a lot of ball, and me and Pedge had a lot of freedom down the wings, which was good. But Western Sydney were always hard to beat. I remember the game which probably clinched it for us, the losing the Premier's plate to them when we played them at home in the pouring rain, and I think there was about 18,000. We absolutely battered them. I think we hit the post 2 or 3 times. Matty Ryan missed a pen, and then Labby popped up in the 80th. They all missed it because they were doing the Poznan. the only goal of the game. But, you know, I think that was Arnie's mentality as well. He learnt from the year before and he went, you know what, from that moment he gave up winning the Premier's Plate and he went, we're going to win the championship.
Well, he rested
us from the Asian Champions League. He left a few of us at home and took young boys. And
at the start of the year, we'd written down, he'd got us to sit in the writers down, what are our goals, what are our aims, both individually and as a collective, as a group. And we wrote down and he said every single person had said grand final winners because it was three times we'd been there in 7 years and lost every time. We knew how much, even the new guys that came in who were made pretty starkly aware of what it meant to the area that we need to have a grand final win. And then when we got to that point and we knew that it was out of our hands to win the premiership, we had a meeting that next Monday and he said, if I go through all of this, every single one of you has written grand final. Forget the premiership, we just play football now and then it'll come and we go for the grand final. And that grand final week, we've spoke about it many times, the difference in that grand final week of the feeling throughout the group of confidence and probably a little bit of arrogance and swagger that we're going to win this one. And it wasn't overconfidence, it was just we knew. We'd Western Sydney had beat us 1-0, but we'd battered them, like you said, in that game. And the week before the Brisbane game, it was, I don't know, there was this, we could do this, we can if we everything falls for us. For me, that week was, we'll win this. We just go out and do our job and we'll win. It was a day to remember.
Yeah, it was. I think, like you said, mate, Raw in 2010, they had that belief. In 2013, we had that. Wanderers were probably thinking about the game before and a bit nervous first time in and things like that. So it was almost like the tables were flipped a bit and it did seem like that in the game as well. But they were still very hard to beat.
Once Patrick scored the goal with the header, I was behind the goals. I still had my shirt on then. It was later on in the game I took my shirt off. I think we knew maybe score the penalty. But it was, as fans, just we there watching the game as a punter, it was...
We didn't have a good run of pens in that year either.
Well, that's why Matty Ryan took a penalty against Western Sydney because we'd missed five. I'd missed two. Monty had missed one in the last minute of a Champions League game to win. I remember Arnie saying, who wants to take the pens? Because he had a go at me for not taking the pen when Monty took it, but Monty wanted to fight me on the pen. He goes, I'm taking it. And I was like, I'm not going to fight you for it. Go and take it. And then he missed. And then Arnie bailed me up in the tunnel going, why didn't you take it? And I'm like... But then, so we had all that, and he said, who wants to take a penalty if we get one in Western Sydney? And me and Swanee, our arms went to go up like this. And Matty Ryan must have went like this because he went, righto, Matty, you. And we went, and I remember walking out of the room that day, and Swanee goes, this isn't going to end well for us either way. Because two senior players, why aren't you taking it? And then we come to the grand final. The crowd was unbelievable, you know, like I showed footage when I ended up going overseas and team players who had played in Europe and everything, seeing the footage of the fans and everything going, is that Australian football? Like, it was just perfect for days.
I had that last week with the semi-final.
Yeah.
People sending messages who watched it in BT Sports in the UK saying, how good was that?
Yeah, the Red and Black Block were on form because it was the first year and we had, you know, all our supporters at one end. It was just a great day and we knew, didn't we?
You just flew out to Asia the next day, didn't you?
Well, we did. Well, we celebrated quite hard that night, obviously, and we were flying. That was Sunday, and then Monday we were flying out to Korea to play in the Champions League. And like Rosie said, the older boys had been staying behind. And that one, Ray, he said to me, oh, do you want to go? And I was like, yeah, whatever, because he says, who cares? It was almost that attitude of, doesn't matter. The chances of us qualifying are slim anyway. We've just had a grand final win, and we're supposed to train the night before, and we all just turned up and went, don't want to train. Arnie went, just have a stretch, we'll go home. And it was no pressure. And we went out, and Mikey McGlinchey got stepped up and scored a goal, and we won 1-0 against all the odds and qualified through to the next round of the Asian Champions League, first time that we'd made it out of the group stage. And we couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I think the big thing about that 2013 squad was probably the depth we had as well. Unfortunately for Monty, he got the red card in the semi-final before and he was integral for that team. Him and Hutch, the holding midfielders, allowed everyone to do their thing, did a lot of the hard work. But yeah, I think to have someone like Bezenic that was able to step in at the time and sort of, you know, do the job that he hadn't played much that year.
Yeah.
He could have come in at left wing or attacking mid or, you know, holding mid. He knew the role to a T. And I think everyone knew everyone's role exactly the way it was. So,
but that Monty red card, it was, for me, I can remember it, it was like slow motion. Because we knew he was on a yellow, and it was enough, it was like the 95th or 96th minute, the ball bounces 25 yards out from goal, the only thing the guy can do is really head it. It was Milligan, I think, wasn't it? Went in for the header, and Monty just started to lift his foot, and you were just, in slow motion, you just think, don't do it, don't do it. And he just lifted his foot, clipped him. I think, till to now, I still think it was a harsh second yellow. And for him to have his only red card of his career, after the career he's had, you know, playing in the Premier League and all those games for Sheffield, and known as being a hard and tough player, he was devastated, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And I think you could see the relief last week when they were going through, and he was going to be not just a part of it, but he'd orchestrated all of this, and I'm going to take these boys. A bit of redemption for him to go, because the celebrations were pretty good when they got that second goal.
Matty, obviously you come back, you were there some of the times, the lean years, what was it like being involved with? Because you've saw the highs and you saw the lows.
Yeah, look, obviously those lean years were heartbreaking for players that have been around the club in the successful times, especially being from the coast. You know, you got all your family, all your friends, everyone supports the club, and you know, there's nothing worse than, you know, when the team's not doing well, you're copping it from all angles. Certain managers being in there, and obviously in hindsight now, you look back and the wrong decisions were made, not the right people for the club. Not the right people for the community, and I think, you know, in a salary cap league, you're going to pay for that for a long time. You know, you make bad decisions for 1 year, it's probably going to last for 3 or 4 years for you to turn that around.
That affect it with the overseas players that come in as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think we talk about Terrigal being a beautiful place to live, but you can't have, you know, people coming over and thinking, well, this is a holiday, and then, you know, and then they pack up and leave, and we're here to pick up the pieces, you know, whether it's in media or you're living on the coast or, you know, working still at the club. It's hard to do. So that's always a battle to make sure you get those decisions right. And I think in that period there, the decisions weren't right. You know, I see on the, you know, Usain Bolt coming in. I remember it was I'd come back from Sydney FC at the time, and, you know, great marketing ploy, but it just wasn't the right time for the Mariners.
I remember texting you, you were calling the friendly game at MacArthur going, why can you not tell the truth about this, what's going on? And you've been basically told to keep your mouth shut.
Well, you knew it was a marketing ploy from the start, but you get back to not having the right people involved. For me, there's a real seminal moment in that dark point, and there was a time when you obviously went off to Sydney, and Arnie, when you scored two goals against them, it was a two in one game, and he turns around in the crowd and he went, you didn't want him. The people in the club didn't want you here, or they didn't think you were valuable enough a person to keep around, which anyone who's from this area and who knows you well knows full well that you're the heart and soul of the club, and that you'd do anything for, and you would never undermine any manager or anything along those lines. You always did what was best for the club and the community. And for me, the fact that you had to leave to go away to Sydney, which I know you didn't want to do, but you went there and then obviously enjoyed your time and were successful, and then it took them to realise, hey, you know what, we need this guy back. And for me, that was, they're the small things, you know, and I got caught.
Yeah, well, that was Monty. When I, you know, I went to Sydney, obviously, as you said, I had to go to Sydney, and I'm forever grateful for Sydney giving me that opportunity. And I love, the, you know, they're my second club, winning a championship there, and what they did for me and my family in the period where, you know, as you say, those people in those positions made those decisions. But it was Monty, after 3 years at Sydney, that they wanted to keep me. But, you know, Monty rang me up and asked for a coffee and said he was going to be assistant coach. He wanted me to be the first player to bring it back to the club. So I think he knew the process that needed to start to fix all those bad decisions over that period.
Another good decision this year is bringing back Vuka.
Yeah.
You know, he's been there for day one, knows the club through and through. He's a winner. He's great with the player, great with everybody. He's had a fantastic season. So credit to Monty and the team for getting him back.
And it's good to see the club, because I think Sean Mielekamp said, you know, you go and hit rock bottom, and the Mariners just kept going. They kept drilling through. And I think we're all pretty honest, and, you know, we're pretty honest in our appraisal of ourselves and our region. And I got caught, you know, when I got caught calling the club effing dog shit, the performance. That was actually the producer in my ear, who's a Mariners fan, going, what the fuck is going on with this place? And we just had an honest conversation about where the club is, and obviously it got caught on camera. But do you know what? As soon as that got out, first person to talk to me, Sean Mielekamp, I went downstairs, I said, look, I've said this, I think it's going to come out. And he said, Macca, you're an ex-player who's passionate about the club, and all you've said is the truth. It's not good enough. And that's what I've liked about Sean all along is, even though the ownership stuff was there and he was in charge and he was fighting against a losing battle at times, he always said, this isn't good enough. This isn't where we want to be. We're not going to accept this. We need to do better. And now it's great to see that the club has realised those mistakes, have put the right people in place, him and Monty, and there's plenty of others, you yourself, who have been involved in that, to see now the club come from that depths to be where it is now, just I think makes the story even better.
You look now and the things that are put in place, I think we're okay now for a few years, I'd like to think. Back then, we really didn't have a succession plan. You know, we are going to be a selling club. We're a development club. That's the business model. That's fine. But now we've got the academy and the youth team to back it up. We can sell three or four and bring the next three or four through. That's the whole model.
And
that's
Monty's helped, Monty and because he was there for 2 years.
Now there, you know, it's
the fruits are coming true now. But Monty brought into the club those years ago. Yeah. But you know, and now it's just the same. It's just a conveyor belt at the moment. All these young players coming through, and they're all handling themselves very, very well.
That's why you see now so many players wanting to come to the Mariners, young guys, because they can see that. Well, if I do, doesn't matter what age I am, where I'm from, whatever it is. If I go there and I work my backside off, and I show that I'm good enough, I'll get an opportunity, and that's what we're seeing now. Look, Niz, you know, told his whole career you're not good enough and too small and all this stuff. Now, for me, he's been one of the integral parts of the club. There's so many others you could go through, Faz and all these young fellas.
Players that are a bit, you know, Nectar Triantis couldn't get a look in at Western Sydney, you know. Yeah. He comes to us on a scholarship, and after 2 weeks of training, Monty's like, he's an A-League contract.
In the ground last week, packed out first time ever for a football match, and you look around and there's so many young people there, and you know, we're out on the pitch and people are calling us over to get a photo with their kids, and the kids have no idea who we are, but they've got a new set of players come through and a new generation coming through who sees them as their heroes. And you can see that momentum building. You know, it takes a long time to build that fan base in a club. We all know it takes generations, but now we're sort of getting to that second and third generation, these kids their parents were Mariners supporters, and now they've got their new set of heroes as well. So that's good to see. That's, you know, multiplying, that's something that you guys started back from the very beginning.
Making the grand final is obviously huge for everyone involved in the club, you know, whether you worked at the club, played at the club, past or present, you know, the community, you know, the fans are the ones that have suffered the most for all those lean years. You know, as we say, players come and go and staff come and go, but the fans are always there. I think they suffer the most. So, look, I'm just so happy and proud that the team and the club has been able to get to where they have this year and sort of repay all those people that have stuck by the club for this long. And it was great to see that, you know, 20,000 at Central Coast Stadium the other night was absolutely huge. You know, we were standing on the ground and just it was so good. Just really looking forward to the game and just proud of everyone for making it.
Yeah, I think you touched on it earlier with 10 years ago, and, you know, occasionally with the old boys go out for a quiet beer now and then, and it's funny because you get 20, 22 year olds ask you for a photo, but what you don't remember is they were 10, 11, 12 back then, you know, we were their heroes. So now you see all the 8, 9, 10 year olds, they got new heroes and they're going to be 20 in 10 years time, you know, it's that whole new generation, the whole new buzz for the coast, for the kids. Football just gets that whole lift in the area, I think. And as I mentioned before, there seems to be good things in place now to really sustain that longevity now. You know, just to compete and just to be that team that people can be proud of, we've got that now.
For me, it just gives the Central Coast, obviously being the mayor for 4 years and being involved in regional development on the coast, it just brings that proudness. The people, you just see people walking about a spring, they step out, you go to the shops, you go to your local cafe, they're just a buzz about the place now. 2013, when I was a mayor, I got the street parade and 12,000 people in mid. I wasn't there, I was at a wedding for one of the girls who used to work at the club, Sarah Buggy, for year one, and I had to go to your wedding. I want to be at a street parade. Yeah. I want to be there and be part of that. Every now and again, I'll watch on YouTube and it's amazing, everybody on the bus and all in the park, and I want to see that, because what it does for Gosford, Central Coast, is amazing. And for me, Mariners getting the grand final, getting a chance to win, and have that happen again. That's putting the pressure on David Farmer and Central Coast Council, but we'll be expecting a victory parade through the main streets. So that's what it means to me.
Well, I think making the grand final for the Mariners is, for me, Simo, I think you touched on it. Ultimately, it comes back to the fans. Yes, there's been a lot of hard work put in by people at the club over a long time. I was only just looking at this before we came in today for work, and per capita, when you take the average fan, the average crowd for the Mariners, for the fan base, or the catchment area, this area surpasses everyone. You know, to have such a small catchment area but still get 7,500 average crowd every year, they're the people who have been coming, and you know what? They were getting 3,000 and 4,000 still. Yeah, it doesn't look too good, but when it's the teams was perpetually, let's be honest, underperforming and garbage.
Second or last.
There's still that small catchment area. It's still not bad, but now those people are getting rewarded for their faith. And, you know, of course, people, when you're successful, will jump on board and go, we want to be a part of it, but that's part of it. And now those people hopefully go to this grand final. If they win, we'll see them coming next year, and they'll be walking around with pride with their Mariners shirts on and looking at these guys as heroes, as rightly they should. So just to give that hope that didn't seem to be any hope for so long, and now it's been realised through a lot of hard work, hope for those fans that street parade can happen and everyone can be there to celebrate the successes that Monty and his team and the whole club have put on. These moves looking real nice in the future. These moves looking real nice in the future. These moves looking real nice in the future. Hold up on a minute, look nice, look nice. These moves looking real nice in the future. These moves looking real nice in the future. These moves looking real nice in the future.
Yeah, we look nice, future looking nice, we don't need to tell them twice.
Here comes the future.
Yeah, we look nice, future looking real nice, we don't need to tell them twice.
Here comes the future.
The Isuzu Ute A-League Grand Final is here. All drama, all noise, all action. Watch Melbourne City and Central Coast Mariners go all in to be crowned champions. Experience it live. Search A-League's tickets.